This is XTP Media.
The conservative Russian military finally got they wanted from the very beginning a two-seat attack helicopter with a high performance in the face of the K-52.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. For takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 103 of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Today we talk to Alexander Maladnanov about his book Gator on the Rise, all about the KA-50, the KA-52 and the KA-52K, Black Shark, the Alligator, the Nile Crocodile, or with its NATO code name, the HOCM. What a fantastic aircraft and so much to learn about it. So let's go over to Sofia in Bulgaria and talk to Alex. Alexander Maladnanov, welcome back to Extended.
Thank you very much for the invitation. So it was one of my biggest effort to work on this book and finish this book on the KA-52 Alligator. So I would be very glad to discuss the book and its content and the technical features and operational features of the helicopter with you.
Wonderful. So before we get into too much detail, how about just an overview? Give us just an overview of the KA-52.
So it's, how to say now, a new generation Russian attack helicopter, which was designed and developed on the basis on the KA-50, which was originally conceived as a Russian countermeasure to the US Apache attack helicopter. It was ordered for developments in the second half of the 70s and emerged as a fully combat capable system in the late 80s in a head-to-head competition with another Russian design, Mi-28, which was then developed into Mi-28N Night Hunter. And it's interestingly that according to the Russian philosophy for the procurement and fielding in service, both of the helicopters which were competitors in the 70s and 80s are currently in regular service with the Russian Air Force, but in a very advanced form with day and night sensors, improved power plant and better missiles. And yeah, the improvement work continues and will continue into the next decade.
Right. So the most unusual thing, I suppose, about particularly for Western observers, although it's interesting to see latest developments from the Americans, is this is a coaxial rotor, isn't it? This is a coaxial rotor approach to designing an attack helicopter. And it was a clean sheet design, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a clean sheet design, but it was based on the CAMOF experience with the coaxial rotor layout, because it was traditionally since the 40s and 50s, the design bureau founder Nikolai Kamov designed to develop this rotor layout due to some of its good advantages compared to the classical layout with the main and tail rotors. And in the 50s and the 60s, they developed to perfection this mechanics and aerodynamics and used it widely in naval helicopters, because for naval helicopters, it provided some sensible advantage. And up to this date, in Russia and in the former Soviet Union, all the naval helicopters operating from ships are using this rotor layout.
Right.
So they had the aerodynamic and the mechanical results from this, and they decided to use to make an attack helicopter, which was, interestingly, the first attack helicopter developed by Kamov. But they were very ambitious, and Sergei Mikhaev, then the chief designer, was very motivated to do something better than the Mi-24 and the follow-on design by the offered by the competitor MIL.
Yeah.
So they decided to risk, but they had some experience before.
But it was originally designed, as you mentioned earlier, as the Ka-50, wasn't it? A single-seat attack helicopter. But that went completely away from the sort of dual-crew approach that traditionally were taken for these sorts of aircraft. Why did Kamov go that route?
So it was interesting. I think it was also shared by chief designer Sergei Mikhaev, because the Soviet government tasked both MIL and Kamov design bureaus to offer a helicopter with better performance than the US AH-64 Apache. That's why they decided to calculate how they can get this flight performance advantage. And finally, they saw that with the heavier Russian avionics and engines, they have a serious weight penalty, which can lead into the performance inferiority. So they decided to reduce this weight penalty by reducing the crew members. So they decided to go to single engine concept with a high level of automation of the targeting systems, because of the coaxial helicopters are easier to control than coaxial helicopters. So the workload on the pilot when flying on ultra low altitude was not so high, but he had to be assisted by powerful computers and automatic systems for the target search and missile launch.
And those systems didn't really exist, did they? They had to be developed from scratch.
Yes, so this was specific that the systems, the targeting automation systems were designed for scratch into the 70s, and because of the inferiority of the Russian electronic systems, they were able to provide systems only for day operations, because the night operation systems proved not functional and not operationally suitable.
Yeah,
but anyway, they designed a good automated systems for targeting and also for aircraft control.
So tell me about design and development.
So in design and development, it is interestingly for Kamov Design Bureau, it is that they are always trying to be as much advanced as possible. And that's why they studied various schemes with aircraft look-alike fuselage, not like a helicopter, which has to be very streamlined with a very robust coaxial system and high aerodynamic performance. They had only one type of engine available at that time, TV3 117, which was deemed to be powerful enough in the beginning, but then when the helicopter gained weight, they started asking for increased power derivatives of the engine.
Right, okay. And how about the procurement process?
The procurement, it was a long story because the Kamov 50 and Mil 28 underwent a long head-to-head competition and comparable trials by the Russian military. And it was also, as it's common in the world, but also in the former Soviet Union, the military were divided by two lobbying groups, one for Kamov and one for Mil. And so it was a competition between the both aircraft, their performance and combat capability, but also by the capability of the lobbying teams.
Yeah.
Finally, Kamov won in both fields. And in 1987, the Russian Ministry of Defense proclaimed that Kamov is the winning design and it should be approved for serial production and for detailed operational testing and ordered the serial production. But when the serial production started, it turned out that the Soviet Union broke up. And this led to the defense budget reduction, and the production was limited only to several examples.
Yeah, now this was still the single seat, wasn't it? This was still the single seat version that was being developed. And the procurement was very heavily focused on the Mil winning.
No, the Mil was also in the, it was in the 90s when in the 1925-6-7, Mil continued with the lobbying and they got the funds and authorization to develop a night operation version. But at the same time, the military continued to support Kamov and started asking Kamov very seriously to develop a two-seat version with night operation capability.
Yeah.
So the conservative Russian military finally got they wanted from the very beginning a two-seat attack helicopter with a high performance in the face of the K-52.
Right. But let me just go back to the flight testing and the handling for the for what was then, I mean, the Ka-50, but it was called the V-80 at the time. Yeah. It had lots of challenges, didn't it? It was called the Black Shark.
Yeah, it was called the Black Shark, but this was by marketing purpose after the Soviet Union dissolved and Russia decided to show the helicopter to the world. And with this first appearance at the Farnborough show in 1992, but after that, they started to look for a good marketing name, and this was their choice. But in the beginning, it's very easy for the normal regimes of flight. But when test pilot started flying some extreme flight modes, the first prototype crashed due to the collision of the rotor blades of the upper end rotors.
It was pushed beyond its limits, wasn't it?
It was pushed well beyond the limits. Yeah,
and that hit Kamov quite heavily, didn't it? It sort of set them back a little bit in terms of their position with the Russian government.
At which time do you refer?
This was this early crash during the flight testing.
Yes, it was a serious setback because the new and very promising helicopter was lost in flight test. But then Kamov did a good mobilization and started studying this extreme modes and flight and used heavily the second prototype for various testing to show that it was not a fault of the aircraft itself, but it was a test pilot who decided to push beyond the limits.
Yeah.
And finally, they were able to overcome the problem and continue the testing in a smooth way to start exploring the performance and then the combat capability by testing the missiles and the gun.
Yeah, and it went off to, in its early years, it went off to operate in Chechnya, didn't it?
Yes, but it was in 2000 and 2001 when it was an initiative of KAMOV and the Russian Army Aviation Command authorities, who decided to provide funding for restoring the airworthiness of two helicopters and do combat testing tour in Chechnya, which proved quite successful.
Yeah.
Because they were able to fly head-to-head to fly shoulder-to-shoulder with the Mi-24 and were able to figure out the performance superiority of the KAMOV.
Yeah, and it also demonstrated that in hot and high conditions it was very good.
Yes, because the airframe is lighter and also the coaxial rotor scheme is better in terms of aerodynamic efficiency, because there is no power lost for driving the tail rotor. That's why the hot and high performance is quite good on the K-50.
Yeah, and just going back, Alex, to the emergence of the aircraft in, as you said, in 1992 in Farnborough, the Soviet Union more latterly Russia did a fantastic job of hiding this from the West, didn't they?
Yes, this was a surprise for everybody. Even I was a young enthusiast, and I was surprised Russia has such an interesting helicopter, which was well hidden in the past, because Mi-28 was widely known. It was shown in 1989 show in Paris, so it was more or less well known. But in 1991 and 1992, when the KA-50 was declassified, it was a big surprise, and also then suddenly it was shown in Farnborough. It was an even bigger surprise. So, but this is the style of chief designer Sergei Mikheyev. He's such a man that he always likes to do things with surprise and in style.
Yeah, well, it certainly was very new to everybody. So tell us about how it evolved into the KA-52, the Alligator.
So, as discussed before, the Russian military, which are quite conservative as any other military in the world, all the time asked for a two-seater helicopter, initially for conversion training, and then this concept for a command helicopter. So, one two-seater operating in a formation with the single seaters, providing targeting information, command and control, etc. So, this concept was adopted by the Russian military, and they asked KAMOV to develop this in 1995, let's say. So KAMOV had a little money, but decided to fund by themselves this development with some funding support from the Russian MOD. And finally, they do the two-seater by changing the front fuselage of a single-seater. They simply removed the single-seat cockpit and installed a new front fuselage part with a twin cockpit. And they decided to do this side-by-side pilot accommodation, in contrast to the common tandem, step tandem in all other attack helicopters. So it was another unconventional step by chief designer Mikheyev. But speaking with him, discussing a lot about why they did in this way to provide a cockpit which is like the transport helicopters, he say there is some serious advantage in crew interaction provided by this cockpit layout, and they decided that this advantage is better than if they went for a tandem cockpit. Anyway, they did some prototypes with a tandem cockpit, which were for ground demonstration purpose only for the Turkish and Korean tenders.
Yeah. Now tell me about the data link and the integration of the battlefield data, because the KAMOV's very good at integrating with other systems.
Yes, because we have a lot of data link experience with naval helicopters, with the KA-27, which is anti-submarine helicopter, anti-submarine warfare helicopter. They have a big experience in data links for exchanging targeting information between helicopters operating in anti-submarine missions and helicopters and ships. So they decided to use this philosophy for helicopters on the battlefield. Anyway, this is something like the now modern net-centric warfare. They did this into the 90s with their experience and the available hardware at the time.
From across the globe, from the center of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
What about the weapon load of the Alligator? What's it capable of carrying?
So the Alligator, in its normal configuration, is able to carry all the weapons which were tested and cleared for the K-50, which means that the long-range weapon is the Viher. It is an anti-tank guided missile up to 8 km range. This is the main work weapon. And then they also integrated the so-called Attack 1 anti-tank guided missile, which is much more affordable. And in terms of unguided weapons, it can use 80 mm rockets, and it has also a very powerful gun, the 30 mm gun, which was taken from the BMP-2 infantry fighting vehicle. While for air combat, it can use the Russian IGWA heat-seeking missiles, which were originally developed for in a older launch version, but on the Kamov-52, they are carried under the wings.
Yeah, and it's capable of both air-to-air and air-to-ground operations, isn't it? And that's very much in the ethos of the design.
Since the very beginning, they were considering the air-to-air operation, and in the past, they even offered a Kamov-50, the single-seater, in a dedicated helicopter fighter concept with a search and track radar in the nose and air-to-air missiles for use against slow-speed aircraft, helicopters, and drones.
And Alex, tell me a little bit about production of the Ka-50 and the Ka-52. It's very different in Russia how they develop and then produce their helicopters. The development's done very separately from production. How does that work?
This is traditional since the beginning of the Soviet era aircraft development and production in the 20s and 30s, and even during the Second World War. There is a network of specialized design bureaus who do the design, development and testing, and then the mass production is handled by big plants, where they produce the entire fuselage without any outsourcing, and the only things they cannot produce at those plants are the specialized equipment, avionics and engines. For the engines, they have also separate very big plants. And the Kamov 50 and 52, it's interestingly, were ordered to be launched in production in the most remote Russian production plant. It is the plant named Progress in Arseniev in the Far East, not far away from Vladivostok, which is itself close to Korea and Japan.
And why was that, Alex? Was there any reason for it being so far away?
This far away, it was, let's say, a legacy from the Second World War, when Soviet Union decided to move the aircraft production plants from the European part and distribute into the other parts of the Soviet Union. So then they ended in this remote location with a small plant in the war times, which was then further developed into production facility. And by chance or not, into the late 60s, it was ordered to launch in production the Mi-24, the old generation Russian attack helicopter. So the plant had a lot of expertise and experience in producing attack helicopters.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about operational service. How long has it been in service? Where does it operate?
The Kamov 52 was the funding of the serial production and the completion of the flight test was provided in 2008 or 2009, and the first production standard helicopters were delivered to the Russian Army Aviation Combat Training and Aircrew Conversion Center in December 2010. So this is the first deliveries. Then the first frontline unit got its helicopters in June 2011. It was a combat regiment which was situated next to the production plant for the beginning of the operation, which was very good from the logistic support and maintenance point of view. Because with all the new helicopters, there are some teething troubles and upgrades, modifications nonstop. So the proximity of the production plant is always a good advantage.
Yeah. And are there any how's it been in service for the last sort of 10 years?
In service, it's more or less in a good situation. In the beginning, it had some teething troubles, especially with the avionics and the target systems. So while the mechanics, the engines, the fuselage, the rotors fare pretty good. So as of now, there are around 100 helicopters in service, which are keeping six frontline squadrons and one training squadron. So now it is, it could be said that it's the main type of helicopter of the Russian military, together with the Mi-28, which was also launched in production and is in service in comparable numbers. But in contrast to the Mi-28N, the Kamov has a powerful search radar, for example. We have a fully integrated self-protection systems against heat-seeking missiles. So it could be considered as a more complex and more comprehensive and more capable weapon system.
Yeah, okay. Useful to know. And other variants, Alex, they developed a naval variant.
Yes, the naval variant was ordered for development when the Russian military decided in 2011 to buy two French-made Mistral assault landing ships. So the assault landing ships are used mainly to carry transport and combat helicopters, and Kamov was ordered to build a naval version. And thank you to the design bureau, huge expertise and experience in naval helicopters. It was a very straightforward development, with the main design difference being the folding rotors and wings and the modernization of the fuselage with improved corrosion protection and also the beefed up the strengthened undercarriage and the capability to carry heavy combat walls under the wings.
Are you fascinated by aviation and its history? Are you hungry to expand your knowledge? then you're ready for The Aviation Historian. A compact format quarterly journal, The Aviation Historian is a cross between a magazine and a book. It uses the best authors and the best picture sources to explore the less well-known paths of the history of flying. It's created by experienced, award-winning former Aeroplane magazine editors Mick Oakey, that's me, and Nick Stroud, so you can trust it for quality, accuracy, and sheer passion for the subject. The Aviation Historian. We're print, we're digital, but we're not in the shops. Order us online and find out more at theaviationhistorian.com. Are you ready for it?
G'day, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
And one thing that was common to the system throughout was the ejection system, wasn't it? Unusual in an attack helicopter.
Yes, as I said, Sergei Mikhaev, the chief designer, is very forward-thinking. So this was his idea to provide the pilots with chances to bail out in critical situations. This is an element which affects the psychological situation, the psychological state of the pilot. When he knows that he can bail out in any critical conditions, he can perform better the combat mission. And the Russian company Zvezda, which is well known with the design and development of the ejection systems for fighters, was tasked to do the ejection system. But compared to the fighters, the ejection system is not using ejection seat. The pilot is extracted from the aircraft by a rocket, which drags him out from the aircraft, and before bailout, the rotor blades should be jettisoned in order to provide a safe bailout. And the system for both the single seater and the two seater had been tested on a ground sled with very good success. There are some video available on the YouTube with very spectacular ejection sequence.
After look out for that, so you put some links into the show notes. How about exporting it? How did it get sold to anyone else?
Yes, the export, as you know, with any expensive weapon system, the export is not so easy undertaking. Actually, Camouflage was trying to export the single-seater K-50 and the two-seaters in the 90s. There were some attempts for selling, for example, to Slovakia. Then they participated in the Turkish competition with the first and the second phase, also in South Korea. They gained a lot of experience, but were not successful with export. But when the K-52 was fielded in Russian Air Force service, there was one export customer who went straight for to the Russian government and expressed its desire to buy the helicopter. It was the Egyptian military, Egyptian Air Force. They ordered 42 helicopters, if I'm not wrong, or 46, I have to check.
46, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah,
46.
The order was placed in 2015, and the first deliveries were made in 2017, and there is not too much information released by the Russian industry and military about this because it's a classified deal. But from the little information released, it could be concluded that the deliveries have been completed or are near completion by 2020.
So where does the Alligator go next? Are they still developing it? Is there still development in progress?
There were some big plans and some more moderate plans, but the latest information released by the Russian MOD and the Russian industry is that right now there is an ongoing upgrade program, and after completion of the upgrade program within 2 years, the Russian military are going to buy 114 helicopters. The main upgrade will concern the sensors, the targeting system, the infrared and electro-optical. Also, they will get better radar. And also, we will get more guided weapons. They will get a new long-range missile, which is beyond one line-of-sight missile with up to 25-kilometer range, which is already fielded by other helicopters. So this is the more or less the main direction for upgrade. There is no plans for upgrading the engines and the rotor system at this stage,
right,
because it is deemed that the flight performance at this stage is satisfying the Russian military requirements and in the new decade.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting, because I thought they'd look at the engines next, but yeah, I suppose that makes sense. If it's serving the purpose, why upgrade it? Alex, one of the things that makes CAMOF helicopters very successful is they're very good in the field of operation, aren't they? They're great for maintenance, they're easy to maintain, and I think that was one of the key requirements for the development of the helicopter, that it was self-sufficient.
Yes, all these were military requirements during the Ka-50 development, based on the experience with the Mi-24. So it was to be much easier to maintain and to be better self-sufficient than the Mi-24, which means that it can be deployed without any ground support equipment and vehicles in the field and operate for 2 weeks, for example, without any ground support, just to put some fuel and some fast inspections.
That is amazing, though, isn't it, for a helicopter of that complexity to be that self-sufficient for so long in the field. But it's demonstrating that it can do it, isn't it? In service, it's got a fantastic service record.
I cannot say fantastic, but it's pretty good for
for Russian.
Released by the Russian Air Force. So
yeah,
it was used operationally in Syria, and there are no any remarks about the maintainability or performance there.
Just going back to Egypt, I love the name, the Nile Crocodile.
But I think it's not official. Anyway, but it sounds very good.
Yeah, it does. And I have to say, Alex, the helicopter looks very impressive, doesn't it? It's a beast of a helicopter. It looks like it's an attack helicopter.
Yes, you're right. But when discussing, for example, with the chief designer Sergei Mikheyev.
Yeah,
he's expressing his vision that the single seater was looking much more aggressively.
Yes, yeah.
So the two seater is, you see, it's a bit with the two seat cockpit side by side. In the front is not as sharp and streamlined.
Yeah, but it is, you know, its wings, because it's got mini wings as well. The whole stability issue is so critical to the performance of the helicopter, isn't it? It provides such stability to make it a great platform.
In terms of stability, because of this is an inherent feature of the coaxial rotor scheme, that it's much stable in terms of vibrations and of oscillations than the classical scheme. So
yeah,
the gun firing and the rocket firing, the unguided missile, unguided weapons employment is much easier and more precise than on conventional helicopters.
Yeah, very much so, very much so.
Alex, and also it is much less workload for the pilot.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Yeah, with a more stable platform, it's easier to deliver the weaponry, and it also helps in terms of accuracy. Alex, what made you write this book? Where did the interest for you come in writing the book, which is called Gator on the Rise?
So the interest is that I was always have been interested in Russian combat helicopters since I started my journalistic work into the early 90s. So it is 28 years since now. Then I started visiting Russian air shows and events. I wrote also some short books on MI-24, and I wrote numerical articles on the MI-24, MI-29, and the Kamov 5052. Finally, I entered into contact with Kamov Design Bureau. I got a personal relationship with Chief Constructor Sergei Mikhev. I was given a visit to the Kamov Design Bureau and to the serial production plant. So I had plenty of contacts and plenty of information, which I tried to pack into the book.
Yeah. Now, Sergei Mikhev, you talk a lot about. You mention him quite a lot in the book. He's very passionate about the designs of his helicopter. What's he like as a person?
So he started working in Kamov after graduating from the Moscow Aviation Institute when he was 23 or 24 years old. And then at 36 years, when he was 34 years old, he became the chief designer. So he was the star of the Kamov Design Bureau in the 70s and continued with his advanced ideas all through the time. Even now, he is the general designer of Kamov up to now. Now he is nearly 80 years old, but he still has an energy and passion for new developments.
Yeah. It certainly comes through in the book, which is full of photographs. It's bright, it's big. I definitely recommend it if you're interested in this aircraft to go out and get it. It's published by Helion Books.
Yes. I would like to thank them and especially Duncan Rogers for believing into my concept. So he trusted me, and I think we both delivered a good product. From me was the writing site and the photographs, and for him was the layout and the printing job, which was excellent.
Yeah, and then just to, I suppose, describe it, is quite a large format. It's not a small book, but you can't really have a small book with some of these photos. You've got to be able to present the helicopter, and some of the shots are fantastic. We'll include some in the show notes. Alex, thanks very much for that. What are you working on these days?
On these days, I have some small projects. For example, 2 months ago, I finished another book from Helion, which was published, but it was dedicated to the Bulgarian Air Force operation into the 50s during the Cold War.
Right, okay.
It was already published, so... But right now I work on some local projects. For example, I work on another attack helicopter, MI-24, but only concentrated on the service in my country, Bulgaria.
Right. Okay. Well, looking forward to seeing that. Alex, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm on the Facebook and LinkedIn, definitely.
Yeah, okay. I'll put links in the show notes to that. Alex, is there anything we've missed about the Alligator? I mean, it's such a interesting product. Is there anything we've missed that you think is worth telling about?
I think we more or less did the coverage of everything. Maybe we missed the second crash of the K-50, which was crashed during aerobatics training.
Yes.
by the Russian combat training center commander, General Vorobyov, who was a combat experienced pilot, but as was the case with the first crash of the K-50, he also went beyond the limits. He pushed the helicopter beyond the limits and had the same collision between the rotor blades of the upper and lower rotors.
Yeah, and because of the flying capabilities of this craft, because it is different, it performs in a different way. It's got a very interesting turning circle and very good for battlefield operations. What did the pilots say about flying it? Because most of what I read in the book was that it's a pilot's helicopter.
Yes, exactly, because of this stability and easy to control. And also, he have very powerful engines. So everybody is happy in flying and using it for combat. The only remarks and complaints are about the performance of its targeting suit, because Russians have no long-term experience with, for example, infrared imaging systems. So the use of the infrared imaging systems on the helicopter is not providing such a high performance targeting capability, but this is work which they can do in the futures to integrate better infrared imaging equipment, for example, and also the helicopter still is flying without a helmet-mounted display and targeting system, which is a must for all modern helicopters. So there is a area for a further improvement and development in the future.
Yeah, and do you think they'll do that, or do you think, given that the Russian military is happy with the helicopter and its performance, they'll keep it as it is?
So they are doing this improvement infrared detection systems and helmet mounted display for the upgraded versions, which is currently in development and is planned to be launched in mass production in 2022. And maybe at a later stage they will retrofit the existing fleet, but it depends on many conditions. First, availability of funding.
Alex, it's been fascinating again talking to you. Thanks so much for your time, and I do apologize for the noise in the background of my house while we were chatting there. I do apologize.
Thank you for the attention in my book, and hope to continue in this way with the other books.
Yeah, there's another story to tell.
Yeah.
Okay, Alex, thank you.
Bye.
We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. You can find Extended now on Stitcher.com, UKpodcast.com, thepoddirectory.com, and of course free on iTunes. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license. You can find Tim at RAESTimR on Twitter. You can find Gareth at Gareth_Stringer on Twitter. And you can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter. You can find the program on Twitter and on Facebook at Aviation Extended. That's all one word without the leading E. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned into this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
has taken me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need. Extended!
This is XTP Media.